Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Please consider supporting Black Women United, YEG, for the protection and advancement of Black women and girls in Alberta. You can learn more about them at bwunited.ca. They are always looking for donations and volunteers. So please, again, support Black Women United, YEG, for the protection and advancement of Black women and girls in Alberta. Again, that website is bwunited.ca.
Creative control, creative control. Comedy, art, and sometimes rock and roll. Let's do a public opinion poll. Raise your hand if you love creative control. 'Cause when Vish is unleashed, well, you... Oh, sorry, I didn't see you there. I was just working on a tribute song to my favorite podcast, Creative Control, with Vish Khanna. My name is Matthias, and I play in a band called The Burning Hell, but more importantly, I support Creative Control on Patreon, and I think you should too. Quality long-form arts journalism is like a magical talking unicorn. It definitely exists, but it can be really hard to find. Fortunately for us, Vish makes it easy with hundreds of funny, thought-provoking, well-researched, and engaging interviews with artists from all over the world. Your flexible monthly donation on Patreon will get you plenty of special exclusive treats and help Vish keep his podcast well-fed and cared for properly, the way a magical unicorn deserves.
To make your flexible monthly donation to Creative Control, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol today.
Corey Hansen is a remarkable songwriter, guitarist, and singer based in Los Angeles, California. A member of the band Wand, Hansen is also a hard-touring solo artist whose compellingly explosive third album, Western Come, was dispatched into this world by Drag City Records on June 23rd, 2023. As such, Corey returned to this show for a fun talk about things like his California upbringing and lifestyle, what Western Come means to him as an idea, the inspirational role that certain filmmakers played for him with these new narrative songs, Neil Young and Crazy Horse, American rock music, and genre signifiers like Southern and prog rock, the Sunset Strip, Van Halen, Guns N' Roses, and social media, the guy who commandeered a merch table and led Corey to go viral, the motion picture Twins, being a guitar person, and Michael Jordan, stopping a song versus fading it out, tour dates, other future plans, and much more. A part of the Entertainment One Network with the support of listeners like you who follow and subscribe to this donor-driven podcast and spread the word about it, and make flexible monthly donations at patreon.com/creativecontrol, which is the primary source of revenue for all the work that goes into this show. Thank you for supporting the show at patreon.com/creativecontrol. Plus in-kind support from Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee, respectively, in Guelph, Ontario, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario, This is episode 783 of Creative Control, featuring the lovely and talented Corey Hansen with your host, me, Vish Khanna. Hey, Corey, how's it going?
Hey, Vish. Good to see you.
Oh, it's good to see you again. It feels like a lot has happened to you since we last spoke, and it's just nice to see you again. Where in the world are you?
I'm in Los Angeles, California, in Highland Park. It is a kind of gloomy day, as it has been most days, actually, weirdly.
Oh.
This winter and spring.
Weather-wise, it's been gloomy.
Yes. No. Huh. Everything, yeah. Everything else is good, but the weather's been kind of shit.
Weirdly. Even as I'm speaking to you, and maybe by the time people hear this, it'll be different, but I'm in Alberta, and we have wildfires, and I think of California as a place that has to deal with that almost every year. Have you had the wildfire season started? Am I accurate about that, by the way?
It hasn't begun quite yet. Everything's still pretty wet, but it'll dry up. There was a lot of rain, so the wildfire season is going to be, it's going to be a good one.
Oh man,
get the popcorn out.
I've lived here 3 years now. I haven't had this happen to this extent where it's like it's bad here, like state of emergency in the province, kind of bad.
So
I
don't mean to happen in Alberta in the springtime. I don't understand.
Apparently, what I heard was there wasn't enough snow in the winter, and so it was just a dry, everything thawed more quickly or something, and there was. I don't know. I think it's also people, they're like, please stop using your off-road vehicles and flicking your cigarette butts at the dry grass. I don't know. I really don't know exactly. But it's happening, and it's not super far from where I live, which is different. Anyway, I didn't think that was going to be a factor living in Edmonton. So it's a good question you raise. But have you been, and I don't mean to take us down this road too hard. You're a California guy, right? You've been there a long time.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Fifth or sixth generation Californian.
Yeah.
Very rare breed.
People leave usually?
Yeah, people leave.
Yeah.
Especially now because it's so gosh darn expensive.
Expensive, and does the climate volatility ever make you think, maybe it's time to end the lineage and move along somewhere?
I like the heat, you know? It took my ancestors a lot to get here.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
They had to cross, you know, the Donner Pass and all that stuff.
Yeah,
ate each other. They ate, you know, babies and dogs and horses and made it out here. And actually, my mom just told me that my great-great-great-grandparents settled on Meridian, which is like 2 blocks away from where I am right now.
I see.
Which is crazy. In Highland Park.
I don't believe the last time you were on that we covered the fact that your family was part of the Donner Party. Is that true?
No, but this is appropriate actually for the subject matter of the record.
Yeah,
of the Western Cum record.
Yeah, yeah. I can't wait to get into it. I want to tell you first of all, congratulations on this wonderful record. It's great. We've been loving it in my household, if I may say.
Great.
Now, I did have a weird thing happen. I think it was just yesterday. I was my wife has been taking her bicycle to work, but some days here now because of the fire, the air quality advisory makes you think, like the kids have indoor recess now. Today is fine, by the way, but this week it's been a lot of like, yeah, it's probably not good to be outside. Anyway, all this to say, I happened to be driving my kids to pick up my wife unusually this spring, and we were listening to your album and everyone was into it. And my son glanced over at the screen because it tells you what's playing, and he went, huh, Western, and I was like, yeah. He's like, why is it called Western? He's at that age, you know, where he doesn't know if he should tell us he knows things that are maybe suggestive, and I think that's what was happening. He'd seen the word, he knows the word, but he didn't want to say it, and I appreciated that because my young daughter is in the background. Anyway, it begs the question. I know it might be silly or simple, but we must ask, why Western cum? Why is the title of your album? This is my, let me just say this. This is my son's question to you. I'll get myself out of
this. Yeah, sure.
Why is the record called Western cum from your vantage point?
Well, you know, a record needs a title, and I think it's a damn good one. In the process of trying to select a title at the end of, you know, the journey of making a record, especially one as big and like kind of expansive and guitar heavy as this, it you know, I was going through the titles and that were popping in my head, and I had this song called Western Cum that didn't make it onto the record, but it'll hopefully come out sometime. And it just seemed like a no-brainer to me. It was like, out of all the song titles, that would be the one. And I mean, I could, there's a lot of ways to get into it, but I don't want to color the question too, you know. I sure. Like that people ask the question about why the record is called that, but I think I was, when in the process of making the record, was thinking a lot about origin, you know, like talking about people coming over covered wagon, you know, out west or whatever, or just, you know, origin of anything. Origin's a really interesting idea to me because there's a lot of theories about where things originate from, but there's not a lot of like concrete facts.
Right.
So you kind of have to make something up no matter what. And so that was kind of the way that I broke into the lyrical part of the record. Most of the record was just playing guitar and coming up with riffs and being like, that one's cool, that one's sick, this one sucks, this one's cool, wait, no, it actually sucks. Putting them all together, and then, you know, like that part was a lot easier. The lyrical part was then really fun, you know. I was definitely watching a lot of what was I watching? A lot of like Altman, 70s Altman movies like McCabe and Mrs. Miller and Brewster McCloud and Robert Downey Sr. His movies. And just thinking about absurdity and like tying it into this like kind of Western, like, you know, covered wagon world.
I see. Okay, so it's Western Frontiers. You know, we've established you represent six generations of Californians. That is the West Coast. But I also couldn't help but think of Western culture, you know, the way we talk about Western culture and what that might mean. I appreciate that you invoke the term come because of the origin story that we're talking about here, but does it serve a dual purpose, the Western part of it, to you? Like, are you talking more?
Sure, yeah.
Does it? Okay, I'm just curious.
I mean, it's multi-sided, for sure. That was my West Coast coming out, for sure, dude. Yeah.
And the covered wagons obviously brings us back to, you know, you mentioned some filmmakers there. But yeah, the West, you know, the frontier, so to speak. I feel like there's all of that stuff going on in here.
Sure. And, you know, I like those two filmmakers in particular because they take the West and turn it into, they let their mind twist that soup into something different.
Right.
And like make it, just use it as like kind of like a canvas to do weird shit. McCabe and Mrs. Miller is a very like different kind of film from Greaser's Palace, but there's like, you know, they're telling like a story that is just like using all that stuff as props and stuff.
So did the films that you're citing now inspired you? Did they influence the songs that we're hearing per se?
Sure, probably. Yeah,
I mean, directly. Like, do you feel like you might have copped some plot lines in your narratives here or anything like that? Because, I mean, I'm going through the... By the way, I mean, the guitar playing, I want to ask you about it because it's phenomenal. The band is phenomenal. But I also am very compelled by the lyrics here because, like, if it, the opening track, Wings, do you mind if I just recite something for folks?
Go for it.
So this is... I want to say this is the second verse into... Yeah, I'm just going to go from the second verse onward. Through solid gold binoculars, the tears of the snowman froze right to his face. Well, I snuck in through the carousel, and I found there was plenty of air out there on the wing. I just had to track you down, because it's been 10 years now since you gunned my father down. I'm on a wing. Now, this is very vivid. It's a bit abstract, but it's quite vivid to me. And there seems to be some death and crime lurking throughout the lyrics on this record, but that's an interesting opening. If you spend time with the lyrics and you listen to this amazing song, I don't want to be too heavy-handed about this. Is it fair to say it has like a cinematic quality to you? I mean, is that what we're getting at when you say you watch a lot of movies and then that might have inspired some of this work, or is there something else that you want to talk about in terms of what might have brought those lyrics out of you?
Well, I was definitely thinking about stories. I mean, it's a revenge story.
Yeah.
And each song, I wanted the songs to have like a, as guitar heavy and kind of progressive rock as they are, I wanted them to have like kind of simple folk stories, you know, that are just like classic, you know, revenge, like Persuasion Architecture's like kind of does that too, but it's sort of like a, you know, Dracula in his castle thing. And
well, story, song th- about that Persuasion Architecture feels like four different ideas as a song, as an arrangement, as a structure.
Yeah, sure.
And then, yeah, lyrically too, it's like all of a sudden Nosferatu is involved and you're like, what is happening? So it does feel like, yeah, scenes maybe. Again, sorry if this is too heavy handed, but you mentioned movies and like, I find the lyricism very vivid. Like I picture everything. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, I think that's what I do too. I picture everything and it kind of scrolls out in like lyrically. It's more about the ambient space that the lyrics are happening in, the characters that are there, than about like actually trying to tell like a linear tale.
It's a sense of place that every song brings about, but it's a shaky, strange place. It's surreal places, I find. Like, you just invoked progressive rock, and we've also talked about the Western frontier, but within, I don't know, within some of these structures I'm drawn, maybe it's the harmonic guitar stuff or something, harmonized guitars, I mean. Southern rock also seems to loom large here, or...
Totally.
Maybe even people like Neil Young and Crazy Horse and their interpretation, maybe on After the Gold Rush and maybe Harvest, there's some literally like allusions to what I think at the time we thought of as Southern, I wasn't born, but over time we've come to associate Southern rock with a certain kind of sound. But I also think maybe it's more closely aligned to notions of progressive rock than I maybe thought of. This is what your record prompted me to ponder. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah. I mean, it's an American rock record.
Yeah.
It's like about American music. I mean, there's a lot of British blues influences and stuff that are kind of unavoidable for me because they're just a part of my DNA at this point.
Yeah.
Like Led Zeppelin and Deep Purple and Black Sabbath and then progressive stuff too. But yeah, for the most part, like a lot of the guitar work is influenced. I think I was really trying to pull from the tradition, American tradition of rock music, the North American tradition of rock music. Neil Young involved,
yeah,
you know, in that. But yeah, from blues, jazz to rock and roll, punk. I mean, I guess. And beyond that, you know, to free jazz, free improv, metal, like it kind of just goes all over for me.
Western cultural forms, let's say, sort of.
Well, because Western kind of involves, I mean, it definitely involves European
sure
influence. But Yeah, and then like a, there are some Eastern things too, but they're like Western appropriated Eastern, you know, like cashmere and
modality and yeah, different.
Like they're orientalized in a way.
Yeah, right. I mean,
I'm singing about cashmere and there's talking about a desert and. So you guys don't know what cashmere is, do you?
No, I think maybe that was a placeholder name that just stuck for them. I don't want to slag Led Zeppelin too hard on this episode of the show, but we can if you want. No, I think...
Let's go.
You know, it's funny you mentioned Led Zeppelin. Are you still... this might be a slight tangent. Corey, are you still tweeting actively? I say this one from some ignorance because I'm sort of trying to take a break, and I've always appreciated your meta... approach to social media, where I was quoting it to my wife the other day, where I'm going to paraphrase, but you basically tweeted that you really only use these things to sell records. Thanks. It was something like that.
Yeah,
it really made me laugh out loud, if I may. Are you still kind of actively using it? There's a point to me asking this beyond. I'm thinking of Guns N' Roses as we talk about American okay. archetypes and music and the genres we've touched upon, and I want to ask about them in a moment for you because you seem to be... There's something there, and I want to ask about it. But anyway, are you still using social media as much these days?
Yeah. No, I lurk, you know, a little bit. But I've been off. I've been working. So when I'm working, I go turn all that shit off.
Do you think you'll continue to use Twitter in particular? This is a topic of conversation with lots of people these days.
Because of the Musk acquisition?
Well, there's...
And the changes that he's made, the positive changes he's made to the company?
There's that part of it, but it seems to every week get worse. Like, I think we've all just been like, maybe someone will just take this back. Like, I don't know what we're all doing on it at this point. You know what I'm saying? Like, it feels like it's been on the decline ever since he took it, but it's like really getting ugly. I don't see too much of it or experience too much of it personally, but I see other people's accounts of what they're dealing with, and it sounds... just seems like a weird thing to be a part of and support. But I think you've always had that apprehension or conflict of like, why am I using this? Is that fair?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think it's an extreme time suck, and it just bleeds minutes, hours, days of life, of precious life, with little or to no value unless you're objective about it. And like I try to be and be like, I'm here to sell records. I'm not here. Like, even if I'm being, you know, opinionated about something or critical of something, my only reason for doing that is to hit a viral tweet and have a bunch of people see it. And, which has only happened once.
That was a great story, by the way, of the guy. I think you're alluding to the guy who drunkenly started selling your merch for you. Is that what happened?
He was on LSD and cocaine.
I'm sorry. Drunkenly
and very,
undersells.
And very drunk. Yeah. Drunk was like a third of the equation.
Oh, okay.
And he was probably dehydrated, you know, needed to drink water. And so that was probably happening too. But yeah, he was fucked up. He was a blank man. You know, you looked into his eyes and his soul had left.
And he took over your merch table? Did I get that part right?
He did, yeah. While we were playing. He just started selling things and was, you know, selling them for double or triple the price and then just handed me a wad of cash at the end of the show.
He didn't take the money.
Oh, no. He gave it all to us.
I'm sorry.
And... so that really was a confusing interaction for me because here's somebody who's like obviously a big fan. They're also like really out of control and fucked up, which is something that happens a lot at shows.
Sure.
It's called being, we call them punishers because they, you know, come up and they lack the self-awareness to like give people, whether they performed or not, you know, it's like not just, they're not just punishing me, they're punishing the people around them, mm-hmm. but they lack the self-awareness to be a regular human. And so they're punishing. And, he was punishing and then he kind of took that and started punishing other fans by making them pay double or triple the price for a shirt. And what was confusing about it was that on Twitter, it went viral instantly. And I think that the reason why was because two reasons. It mentioned merchandise, which for some reason gets picked up in the Twitter algorithm, I've noticed, and drugs. Drugs get picked up in the Twitter algorithm.
Are you saying if you just use the word merchandise, something happens?
Well, if you're talking about it, like for some reason, band merch, everybody's talking about band merch. And maybe this is something I see on my feed a lot.
No, I can relate to this to some extent. When I was moving to Alberta, I decided to take some photos of my old... My parents were like, hey, you're moving in Ontario. I went to their house and I hadn't lived there in 20-odd years. They said, oh, good, you're moving. Take everything that is here. We don't want it. I was like, oh, okay. Among the things were old, very old music t-shirts. And so I started to tweet... I took some photos just because it was a reflective exercise, and I think I put them on Instagram. And among the shirts were like a vintage 1994 Sonic Youth shirt, a few different Nirvana shirts from my teenage years. And out of the woodwork, these dudes came at me like, I'll give you $2,000 for that shirt. And I was like, what? But it just kept happening. And they actually just got one of the most dogged... Because I wanted to explore this. This whole culture that I didn't understand. Mm-hmm. Are you aware of this? The vintage or...
Oh, I'm very aware.
Rock t-shirt?
There's a shop.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a shop down the street, and he had a bunch of vintage Nirvana shirts. And I said, well, these are cool. And he's like, check this out. And he brought out this coffee table book that this press in Japan made that was every Nirvana shirt that had ever been made in like mint condition and just photographs of them all.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, he was like, he was on it and kind of told me all about it. And then this influencer girl walked in and bought like $1,000 Nirvana shirt while I was there.
Yeah. So I have three or four shirts that apparently, I mean, I've also heard like, be careful. They'll tell you they'll pay you and then they'll pay you and then they'll take their money back. So it's like, it all seems very scammy. And I actually said to my dad, I'm like, I don't know what's going on. Can you just ship? I took what I could, but I left some stuff. Can you just ship that stuff? And he's like, all right. And he did. And then he checked in with me a couple months later. So did you sell the shirts? I think he knew I probably hadn't done it. And I was like, no, I never got around to it. He's like, ah, I shipped you the shirts. You didn't even make the money. Because I was like, dad, I don't know what's happening. But between all of my inventory, I think I'm sitting on like $6,000 worth of stupid old t-shirts. Anyway, I really digress there in a way, but there is some mania about band merchandise is all I was trying to follow up on that I'm still I'm still trying to figure it out, and maybe I will sell them now that I feel like I haven't done anything with it, so you're prompting me. Anyway, your point was your tweet went viral for two reasons. What does that tell you, though, about what we're putting out there? Because I had one viral tweet from my podcast account, and it was me tweeting about a joke my son told me that went viral. That still gets a click or something, a like every once in a while. But the rest of my time is like, here's a meaningful interview I did with Corey Hansen, everyone. Please have a listen to this substantial thing. And it's
crickets on
not
Twitter.
As much, right? Like very little interaction. So that experience, what did it tell you about the form, the medium that... You're trying to sell your records, but what really seemed to get people going was a good story. Sorry, maybe I'm asking you a leading question by adding that part. Did that tell you anything about these platforms, that went wild while your tour dates maybe or your album announcement gets not as much of a reaction?
Well, it taught me something about the way people see things on Twitter, because... You know, it's like when you see when 160,000 people are liking a tweet, which means like it's probably reached like 4 or 5 million million eyes. You know, you get a sense of like how people perceive what is happening on Twitter and on social media in these like small, little, isolated, like kind of like associative cells where there's like. Tweet, 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 you know, and they're all just random, you know, some whatever, quasi-random. And, yeah, like, the thing that quickly happened was there was like a good, like a hero narrative that was established. Oh, because the word hero was involved as well.
Huh.
And so it became like, this guy is a hero because he said he was a hero. Because I quoted him as saying.
Yeah, I remember that.
And so everyone was like, we need to, you know, there was like hundreds and hundreds of replies that were like, we need to hire this, some band, like, we need to hire this guy as our merch guy and stuff. And I was like, well, no, this is, what he did was extremely inappropriate. And if I see him do it again, I'm going to fucking slap him in the face and tell him to get out of my show.
Didn't he show up again? Like, didn't you encounter him again?
I did.
Yeah.
I did. And yeah, again, he made an ass of himself. I think he tried to stage dive at a WAN show, which is not, people just don't do that.
No.
You know?
No.
I mean, they can, you know, but it's not appropriate, really for the, yeah, it's like I saw Melvin's a few years ago and someone got up on stage to stage dive and Dale Crover just started going, get off the stage now. This is very inappropriate. What you're doing is wrong. It's like, that's a good way to do it.
Well, I do think your approach has been one of satire. Like, you told that story and people took it. So it's fascinating. Some bands are trying to glom on to your heat, say, we want in on this. We want to hire this guy. He is a hero. And meanwhile, I would think your tweet was vaguely like you were making fun of the situation by also highlighting it. And I think you have a gift for that. And this brings me back to the point of why I broached this. I saw some months ago, I feel like now, time is a weird thing for me. I think it was a few months ago, you were tweeting about wanting to play with Guns N' Roses. Is this correct?
That's correct, yeah. I'm still trying to figure out a way to reach out to Axl / and Duff. I have my feelers, my channels are open, but I'm not receiving any calls or haven't heard from them yet.
Now, given what I just said, is this satire or would you really like to play a show or two with Guns N' Roses?
Yes, I would. I really, really would. Hmm. Yeah.
Are you a fan?
Yeah, I'm a pretty big fan.
They're a bit of a divisive band. California proud. I don't know what I'm saying there, but they do represent Los Angeles, Sunset Strip. I think some of the sonic allusions you make to that era maybe are on this record. Is that a way to put it? I mean, maybe not actually. What do you think? I'm sorry. There's a reference. You're talking about films and great films earlier. You have a song called Twins.
Yeah.
Features a reference to the film Twins. Featuring Arnold Schwarzenegger and Danny DeVito. And then also there's a Van Halen reference in that song, Running with the Devil, as I recall. Anyway, are there any Guns N' Roses references in the lyrics? I don't think so. I might have missed some.
No. I think I chose not to. I think there's a lot of more like guitar referential Guns N' Roses
style.
There's some Slash style riffing for sure, but yeah, the Running with the Devil lyric is Van Halen, which also, you know, as a Pasadena boy, that they were my heroes growing up. They played the legend, as it goes, is they played in my high school auditorium in the 70s when they were Mammoth.
Huh.
And the drummer backer, his parents knew David Lee Roth because they went to PCC together.
Oh,
Pasadena City College, where I also went.
Wow, so you have a real connection to Van Halen.
I mean, they're not real, totally real, but we've walked the same, you know, streets, you know, for some time.
That's more than most people. I mean, sorry, you literally, yeah. You come from the same place. So, okay, yeah. I wanted to get at that because I can't, like I say, I think you exist online anyway in a world of some meta-ness and some, not ironic distance, but at least you're trying to play the game a little bit. You're very funny is what I'm getting at, and I think that takes you into the realm of satire. I take this music very seriously, but there are some fun things in the lyrics. So you are paying some homage, it seems to me, to maybe a bygone era of California rock music, maybe the 80s in particular. Twins, also an 80s film, sort of a silly... Sorry, is there a great weight to you referencing the film Twins in the song of the same name, Twins?
Oh, yeah, I just thought it was a good lyric. I thought it was a good way to tie the song together.
I want to say I saw at least three quarters of that film recently, again, for the first time in a long time, because it was on the TV. Have you seen Twins lately?
I have, yes. Yeah. I think it's a fine, fine film.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So, okay. So I don't know where I'm going with this, except I'm trying to figure out if this is reflective, if this record is particularly reflective, a reflective one for you about kind of key influences in your youth or something like that, because I feel like that might be the case. Is that fair?
Yeah, I mean, the 80s is kind of a stretch. I was a wee lad, you know. But I do, I mean, the Sunset Strip mystique, I think, is something that weighs heavily on the, or color, you know, is part of the world of this record very much. And it was a little bit part of Pale Horse Rider too, but that one's a little more Inland Empire, like desert. This is more...
Laurel Canyon, maybe? I don't know if that's too weird for Pale Horse Rider, but
not really Laurel Canyon. It's not like an LA record, which is funny because it's got a song called Angeles on it.
Yeah.
But to me, this is more a part of the world is like Sunset Strip, like Viper Room.
Well, know, I mean, so I
Whiskey a Go-Go.
I appreciate that. I the song Persuasion Architecture that I alluded to earlier, I said something like, it feels like it has four different parts. But I feel like it captures various parts of California life in the way you've arranged it. So for those who haven't heard it yet, it almost has like a thrash punk metal arrangement, and then all of a sudden it doesn't, and you come in singing very sweetly. And then it comes back again and all these sorts of things. And I mentioned that the lyrical motifs are kind of sort of disconnected, but coherent at the same time. A bit of a variety pack, that song in particular. Can you tell me a bit more about where that song came from? Just the arrangement? I'm just curious about it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not really sure. I mean, I think I came up with those two parts independently and then did a little progressive rock, you know, marriage of the two.
Yeah.
So it does kind of have this like thrash thing that goes into this like kind of sweet, like kind of Neil inspired bit. I don't know why it worked out that way. I guess I wanted the lyrics to sit inside of something that was like kind of like cozy.
Yeah.
And not, I just don't really have it in me to like sing over fast thrashy stuff. I'm a pretty singer. I don't have any like edge to my voice. I have no hair.
Well, but the hair, I think the hair comes sometimes in the lyrics and what you're singing about. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. I transfer that attitude
into your subject matter.
My snarl, my growl into the lyrical side of things.
I just want to say, like, and I don't mean to blow smoke or whatever, but yeah, I really like the dynamic on a song like that one, where it's all over the place, but you are steadfast in your approach as a singer, because I love your singing. I don't think I've ever really conveyed this to you, because we haven't spoken since, but like, yeah, Pale Horse Rider songs are in my head all the time. My wife will sometimes be like, you keep saying that over and over again. A fragment of a lyric will come into my brain and I'm just muttering as I'm doing dishes, like, Pale Horse Rider, and I just sing it, and she's like, yeah, there it is again. And now she hasn't actually said it. I have a weird tick with that. Just certain fragments of lyrics stick in my head. And I just want to say, in this day and age where we're inundated with stuff, when things stand out for me, I am conscious of it eventually. I'm like, it's weird. That record came out 2-3 years ago, and I'm on such a weird cycle of listening to new music to prepare for interviews, and I don't listen... I feel like I don't always listen to a record as deeply as I did when I was a kid, where like I've cited this example numerous times, but the summer I heard Enter the Wu-Tang by Wu-Tang Clan, it was just in my car on a tape the whole summer. Like I just never stopped listening to it. And to this day, I know most of the lyrics from it because I was like, this is all I want right now. This is the summer of this album for me. And that doesn't happen as much for me. It's very rare. So anyway, I don't mean to, I don't know if you've heard this from others, but you have a haunting, infectious quality, I want to say. Has anyone ever said to you, hey, haunted. Corey Hansen, you have a haunting, infectious quality.
Infectious quality? Yeah, I'm like COVID.
No, I didn't. No, I just want to say, I like the dynamic that you present on that. That record is quite different from this one, but I'm already starting to feel those like lyrical fragments and melodies, I guess is really what they are, from this record are seeping in, and I can see myself in a couple years echoing this record, so... Please take this as a compliment. Not
sure, sure. I do. Thank you.
Not that I need a doctor. I don't think. So
yeah, I mean it's hard. Yeah, the it's hard to get turned on by things the way for me. It's hard to get turned on by things the way that I did when I was first getting into music and was really like hungry to discover, you know, new things and would just was pickier maybe than I am now. It was like, you know, Steely Dan, fuck that. You know, Grateful Dead, fuck that.
Yeah.
Jimi Hendrix, let's go. You know,
yeah.
Like,
yeah.
But the idea with this record was kind of, I had that in mind a lot. I was thinking a lot about that, like being a young kid and getting turned on by something that just came out and felt like it came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And, you know, for kids that are like I was, where I live pretty far from my high school, so I couldn't really see my friends because I live like an hour away. And my mom worked at the high school I went to, so we would drive like an hour to and from every day. And I would go home and I would have nothing to do, no kids to hang out with. So I just played guitar and played guitar for hours and hours. And my brother did the same thing. You know, now we're playing in this band together.
Yeah.
And we're both kind of putting those years of like kind of weird isolation, you know, into practice in this rock band. And yeah, I was just thinking like, yeah, it'd be cool to make something. And I think this with every record that I make, it's like about how to, you know, like focusing in on like what is turning me on at the time. Turn on's kind of like an old term, like a 60s term or something. It's like something that
they would, can have a double know, meaning, like at least a double meaning as well. Yeah, no, I know what you're saying. I'm not
sure. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Western come.
Yeah,
but yeah, you know, if you best and chill, you know, kids want to listen to this record and get something out of it, you know, playing their guitar and having all these new feelings, that's great. If adults do that too, that's great too.
I want to ask you about this. I'm glad you invoked the guitar playing and all the hours you put into it. Because I was contemplating these, as I said, some of these harmonized guitar parts. I believe, forgive me if I'm using the wrong terminology, there's like a harmonic guitar solo on Horace Bates Sabotage. Is that what that's called? When you play the harmonic, is that the right term?
Oh, yeah.
Ringing? Yeah. The ringing? Yeah. Which is like almost a post-hardcore thing. I associate it with like, not quite muting your strings, letting them ring, but it's still sort of muted. Is that a way of putting it? I don't know how to describe it. I'm not
sure. You're just hitting the harmonics.
Yeah.
Math rock.
It's math rock is, I guess, where I'm coming from. So here's the thing, and I don't mean to make you uncomfortable, Corey, but I know that some of us who see a great musician or a dancer or a comedian, or for me, I follow basketball closely. And what often happens at the end of a basketball game, a basketball player will do some bizarre, almost alien-like thing where they'll score 50 points and they'll dunk and they'll... It's just, you can't even... Most of us can't relate to it at all. And then some poor schmo has to be like, what happened? Tell us what you did. And they go, I just put the ball in the basket. We got more points than the other team. They scored less. Like, what do you want me to say? But
sure.
But I think what they're really getting at is like, how do you do that? Like, that's the subtext of every question. So I don't want to make you uncomfortable, but I don't know how else to put this. What is it kind of like being a human being who's a really, really great guitar player? Because the guitar playing on your records is fucking phenomenal. And this one in particular is like a balls out great guitar record. Like, there's, I want everyone to, who likes guitars, some people don't like guitars, But for those people who like guitars, I urge you, if you're hearing me right now, listen to this record. Listen to guitar play. So in the vein of a poor schmo sports field reporter, Corey Hansen, what's it like being a really great guitar player? Can you kind of articulate it? Are you even aware of what it's like for those of us who struggle and don't know how to be a great guitar player?
I struggle too, man. I struggle every day.
I don't hear that. I don't hear that.
It's a heavy lies the crown. no. Well, it's funny that you mentioned basketball, because on the last Juan tour, Robbie, who plays guitar in Juan, picked up a Jordan poster. And it's of Jordan, like, you know, about to dunk. And he's just like, it's unreal. Like his I mean, he's doing the Air Jordan pose.
Yeah.
His legs are, you know, open and he's doing the thing. But he's so far from the net and he's so high off of the ground. And so we taped that to the outside of the van.
Outside?
And it was just to the outside of the van. So everyone that drove by saw that Jordan poster. And by the end of the tour, it became like totally like sun destroyed.
Yeah.
And like all the colors were faded and it had gotten water in it. It was moldy. It smelled bad. And but, you know, I think we still have it. I took it off of the van finally. But we were talking a lot about this in the van. I mean, I'm not a sports person, but Robbie, Evan Burrows, both, like, Evan follows basketball really closely.
Yeah.
And we were just talking about alpha state, you know, like this thing that happened, like you're talking about, where these athletes and a lot of musicians and stuff, they reach this alpha state where time slows down, perceives to have slowed down, and they are sort of able to like have perfect muscle coordination, like this kind of otherworldly understanding of physics and, you know, the way that things work in relation to each other. And then they can, you know, do these like insane tasks.
Hmm.
And music is not nearly as athletic, obviously, and high contact. I mean, it depends on what band you're in. If you're G.G. Allen, is pretty high contact.
but it requires coordination and dexterity
for sure.
Yeah, he was in some sort of state, but it requires dexterity and coordination. Let's put it that way.
Sure, muscle coordination, and there is something about the phenomenon. We all take it for granted, obviously. I mean, I take it for granted, and I have to remind myself that the fact that a drummer can, you know, play something and then I can just jump in and be on time with it is a very unique, like, and special thing.
Yeah.
That is like the way that humans can sync up and just immediately be on the same page about something and then the next minute be totally off, you know, off the page and not know where each other are or what's going on.
Yeah.
And I think that the only reason that I've gotten to where I am now is from hours and hours of playing with other people and understanding, you know, that it's not about like what ideas I've prepared and what I want to bring. Like that stuff, you know, isn't interesting to me. It's more about jumping in and like being able to express something that's spontaneous in a group.
Right.
With this record, it's a little bit different because I wrote, it's the first time since like maybe the 1000 Days record with Wand where I actually sat down and wrote all of the guitar parts, and I wrote all the songs in advance, and I wanted it to be this way of like expanding the way I melodically and harmonically think about guitar. And it's more about the relationship that I have, you know, just plugging into an amp that's blasting me in the face and like playing riffs and like, because there appears instantaneous, you know, this thing that happens while you're playing. But what's really happening is I hit the string and then that creates an acoustic sound. That sound is picked up by a pickup. That sound travels to the amplifier. It goes through the circuit of the amplifier and then it comes back out. And then my ears hear it and my brain registers what's happening. And then I emotionally respond to that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like it feels instant like it's all happening simultaneously, but it is like kind of, you can slow it down.
Hmm.
And so then it just becomes, it's feedback is what that is called, right?
Yeah, yes, I know what you're alluding to, but so you've got some sort of cosmic, that's the wrong word. You got some sort of ethereal plane you enter, and you can't even maybe explain sometimes why it's working or what's happening. It's just sort of, you know, you're create. This explains the basketball athlete answers of like, basically, I'll say something to you to fill time, but I don't know why that happened either. I don't know why this happened tonight. On some level, and why this, just as we're speaking, this happened. Jason Tatum from the Boston Celtics had a phenomenal game 7 in his last series and had a kind of bombed out in game 1. Like, just set a record, literally set a points record for game 7s less than a week ago, and then came back and was ineffectual. So there's something, you're saying there's some sort of, I don't quite know what's going to happen when I plug in, but hopefully it's there. Whatever is usually there is there. Is that a way to put it?
Yeah, there's always something there. I'm glad that music isn't as objective as basketball.
Sure.
Because the parameters of basketball don't really allow for a lot of different kinds of performance.
It's hard data, right? It's stats that we're measuring people up against, their previous stats. Whereas you, as a musician, you can be like on tour and 3 nights are amazing, and the 4th night you think is horrible, but the same response you get from the people, that was amazing.
Yeah.
And I know on my 4th night, I'll be like, yeah, well, I kind of fucked up that song. And I'm like, yeah, okay, sorry, I said good job then. I've learned over the years, I did eventually learn to be like, thank you. And then with the band, you'd be like, man, I really fucking biffed it on the, and they're like, yeah, we caught that, Vish. We heard you biff it, but it'll be fine tomorrow, you know? So there's a bit of that, maybe?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's incredibly subjective.
Yeah.
And there is no way to talk about this stuff without getting somewhat philosophical, if you want, like, a more substantial answer than I put the ball in the basket. like, it's just hard to talk about without reaching into that zone. There's not really a science to it.
No, and maybe that's for the best, that we don't look at this as a rigid pass or fail. It's just, it is sort of free expression on some level that you capture on some level, and through repetition, like you're by yourself playing guitar, and then you're like, oh, this is worth me repeating 3,000 times for the rest of my life. And putting it in a song.
Yeah, sure.
But that one sucks. I don't want to do that one. so there's some mystery to that probably too.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny. I was thinking about this the other day because I feel like there's this perception of musicians that they spend periods of time being uninspired.
Yeah.
You know, that there's like they'll get writer's block or something.
That's what they say, yeah.
And I don't really experience that. I mean, things get blocked, you know. If I'm trying to be objective and I'm like, I have to go sit down and write 10 songs worth of lyrics, I will get writer's block and I'll have to do something else. But that doesn't mean that there isn't like a creative flow that's directed. Like, that I feel like it's going somewhere else. And I think another part of it is I don't really have the luxury to have a significant writer's block to spend, you know, a lot of my time just staring at the sky and being like, what do I do? Like, what is, I need to get inspired. It's like, I kind of have to be inspired because I have to make records, you know, to keep doing this.
Well, but to follow up on what you're saying about people ascribing, an artist having some difficulty doing something as writer's block, isn't the block, so to speak, or that period part of the process? Like, I would assume, I think that if you can't come up with something, and then when you do, you would be foolish not to look back at that supposedly weird period as not informing that. Something about that blockage probably helped you get to where you ended up going in that time frame. Does that make any sense? Like, you learn from that weird fugue state or whatever it is, you learn from it, right? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it hasn't totally ever happened to me.
Right.
Because I can just go do something else. Like, okay, I can't write lyrics, so I'll just write some instrumental music or, you know, now things are getting incredibly tight creatively, like kind of feeling a little bit slammed because, you know, just working on Wand records, solo records.
Yeah.
I've kind of got my hands full and I don't really have the luxury of time to devote to being uninspired.
No, that's
in a way.
Yeah, you're motivated. You're motivated. You're ready to go. You got stuff to do. I appreciate that. So I thank you for this. I want to ask you a quick question that may take us somewhere or nowhere. The songs on this record are all relatively long. One of them, Driving Through Heaven, is like epically long, I guess. It's almost 10 and a half minutes or something like that. And you've chosen to do some interesting stuff with the arrangements where there's like intermittent singing. And I really like that. And I could ask you about that, but we were talking about Nirvana earlier briefly, or Nirvana t-shirts, I guess. Nirvana, someone pointed out to me years after I'd been listening to that band a lot, that almost, I believe, every Nirvana song concludes with a hard stop. There are no fade-outs in the Nirvana catalog. And at the time, someone was trying to draw some connection between maybe Kurt Cobain's approach to life and death and that, just the starkness of, like, everything ended. You weren't left to wonder.
Uh-huh.
You tend to have fade-outs, and there seems to be a lot of, for lack of a better term, jamming. This is not directed at you specifically, but do you have any philosophical stance on the notion of a hard stop versus the fade out? The one, because a fade out can be very mysterious. What happened? Where'd they go? What happened for the rest of the song? They just, it's mysterious in its own way, whereas the hard stop is conclusive. Mm-hmm. Sorry if I'm drawing, maybe this has not occurred to you at all, but I heard the fade outs on this record and I thought of this. So forgive me if this is trite or stupid. Do you have any kind of aesthetic approach to this notion of the hard stop versus the fade out?
Oh, yes. Very much.
Oh, good.
Actually very happy that you picked up on that. The fades are very considered. You know, like, it's definitely a part of the process of I think a lot of listeners will think the fades are cop-outs. You know, as like, well, you just didn't know how to fucking end the song, did you? But to me, I will choose to fade out a song if I want to leave the listener with, you know, the feeling of like a slow, drawn out, like you're being pulled out of like a continuous, like a music continuum. It's just going to keep going and going. And I like that feeling, like it just keeps going. But you're leaving. And then you go back. And then you leave again. I like that it's gradual. I also just like the sound of fades. And they sound different, you know, depending on if you're doing a board fade, depending on what kind of fader you have.
You know,
like what kind of lubricant the fader has. It changes. Changes the taper. There's like the potentiometers, you know, that are in it, the actual audio taper that happens. You know, it can happen on this, it can happen like this. So yeah, the hard stops, do I even have any?
I don't know that you do on this one. I don't know that you do, sorry, off the top of my head on this one, but the fades were really, obviously they spoke to me. The fades resonated with me enough for me to bring them up here. So let's say, for lack of remembering on your part and mine, that most of the songs, if not all of them, fade. And you're saying that's sort of part of the creative process, so to speak.
Yeah, well, I'm a big J.J. Cale fan, and he loves to fade. He's like all about, you know, it's like you're hearing that groove and it's exiting. And, you know, some fades I think are too powerful. Too powerful of a move. Like Asia, both sides of Asia end on like minute long fades. And it's like this symmetrical kind of perfect sounding thing. If you're listening on an LP. And it's perfect.
Yeah.
Obviously, yeah. It's Asia. It's like, everything about it is very considered. Brian Eno does it a lot, you know.
Yeah.
But he's like Another Green World is a record where he does the thing that I really like, which is the fade in and the fade out. So you're really just, you know, kind of coming into this world of the song, and then you're leaving it almost like you're floating in and out of it.
That's true. It's like an invitation to enter and exit, I guess, more than it's gone. The song just suddenly left, or the song just suddenly started. That's a fascinating way of putting it. I'm glad I brought it up then, because I was worried this was a sort of a dumb observation on some level, but it sounds like it's something you thought about a fair amount.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm a huge fan of the fade. The hard stop, I'm not that much of a fan of. I don't like just pulling people out on a record.
It's a vaguely punk thing. There's something to it. There's a structural motivation behind it. I can't think of too many sort of whatever, post-hardcore or punk. A lot of that, we stopped. When I played in those bands, we stopped and it was done. And it was like, this is definitively done. There's no ambivalence or... there's no ambiguity to what you just heard. Whereas a fade, just to speak again, and I don't want to repeat ourselves, but it leaves a little bit more to the imagination, I suppose.
Yeah. I mean, also when you're working with, like in this case, with longer improvised pieces and stuff, where there's not as much like compositional, it's not, you know, being wound like a clock.
Yeah.
Like a lot of punk music is.
Yeah, fair enough.
Then it feels more natural to just like do that. There's not really a good place to hard stop. Some people do it. Like there's a really good hard stop on that Portishead third record on the first song. And it's just like, it's not even like a composed stop. It's just like a studio cut.
Right.
Where they just, song's over.
Yeah.
And I hated it the first time I heard it. I thought there was something wrong. You know, I was like, why did you do that? That's so fucked up. But now when it's the same thing with improvised music. It's like listening to a Miles Davis record, it's improvised music, but it becomes composed because it's on a record.
Yeah.
And so you hear it over and over again.
Yeah. And to your point, there's a difference between a band resolving. I think maybe what it is like there can be the feeling that if a song fades or stops, sorry, if it fades, the band isn't the one making that call. It's the technology or the engineer. Like the band probably made the decision to do the fade. But if a band, if you hear a group of people playing and they stop together, it feels like that was their call. That was their decision. That's what we're hearing. It's right, fully. Right. Anyway, I'm maybe really grasping at straws with this, but I think there's something to what we're discussing philosophically as well as aesthetically. Like what, anyway, for what it's worth, I feel like this record brought this to my attention and made me ponder it. And I appreciate that you went here with me on this and that it resonates with you too. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I appreciate you picking up on that very, you know, kind of studio dorky detail.
Well, yeah. And
of mine. It's definitely something I indulge in quite a bit.
Okay.
You know, the fades.
Yeah.
I mean, listening to Naturally or Troubadour, J.J. Cale records, it's like, the fades are so fucking good. They're sick.
Like I say, I think there's something to them. I think now that I appreciate what you said about them too. It's made me, I'm going to think about them even further and notice them more and more. I think we take them for granted sometimes that they occur or don't occur.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway. Listen, I just want to say I appreciate this conversation. I always enjoy speaking with you, Corey, so thanks for making time for me again. And I want to take this opportunity to once again congratulate you on Western Come and tell people that it's available via Drag City Records. Are there places you want the general public to go on the internet to keep tabs on your comings and goings?
Yeah, dragcity.com. That you look me up, I'm in there. I'm one of the 300 bands they have on their roster.
Okay. So
the 400, the 40 Will Oldham side projects that are, I'm buried under there somewhere.
Just had Will and Lori Damiano on my show to talk about their children's book, Shorty's Ark, and it was really fun. So dragcity.com. What about you? Do you have your own things, personal things, websites?
I got my IG.
Okay.
Hit me up on IG.
Okay.
That stands for Instagram.
Yep.
And I'm also on Twitter, as we as you've heard. I hope I don't disappoint the people talking about my Twitter, and they're going to go and be like, oh, this guy's just shit-talking the Beatles.
It's so exciting about that. Or weirdly, Fender guitars, and then you end up working with them. Is that what happened recently?
Yeah. Isn't that funny?
You slagged Fender guitars quite a bit, as I recall, and then you got a thing saying you worked with them. I'm like, Corey is an enigma to me. I don't know what this guy's all about. All over the road.
I like that. Fenders are great, man. I think that people maybe mistake my opinions as like serious or something.
Satire, man.
But it's hard to have. That's what I love and hate about Twitter, is that the tone of voice is absent. You know, like my personality is absent, and it's very much just like in a vacuum of other tweets.
Yeah, I suppose.
And a lot of people try, Elon Musk is the best example, try to control that narrative as best they can, like him to the point of like buying the company.
Yeah.
You know, so that he could be the most popular person on Twitter and find love for the first time in his life. And sadly, that's backfired for him. And I feel bad for the guy. Mm. This guy's trying to buy, you know, he's buying Twitter and he's trying to fucking go to Mars where there's no life, you know?
Well,
so you can be alone.
Yeah. On that bleak note, I want to go out on a song from Western Come.
Okay.
Maybe we can dedicate it to Elon. Is there a song from the record that we can go out on, Corey? And if so, can you tell me which one you want us to play and why you chose it?
Yeah, let's go out on Ghost Ship.
Ghost Ship. Now, why did that come to mind?
I don't know. I think that it's just a good song, man. It's a good song to sail out from a wonderful conversation. This wonderful conversation we've had, you know, to sail away on this ghost ship.
Yeah.
Till next time.
I just want to point people out to a few lyrics out to people. The entrails of a dog, the cocaine that you're carrying is taped onto your balls. Swinging around in the darkness, no one to hear your call. In a travelogue written by 7 dwarves, I'm going to tell you all I'd forgotten at the bottom of the world. Very strange stuff, if I might say. But
true story.
But it is, it's funny because it's true. Let's hear it now. This is a Ghost Ship from Western Come by Corey Hansen. Corey, always a pleasure. Thank you for making time for me. I hope you really did enjoy yourself. I think you did. I feel like you're sincere and not satirizing me. Thank you for being on. I hope we talk again, and best of luck in the future.
Of course. Thanks, Vish. Thanks for having me.
Down and spinning around, trails of a dog. The cocaine that you're carrying is taped on to your balls, swinging around in the darkness. No one to hear your call. In a traveling dog.
New glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
I love that Corey Hansen, and I love this new album, Western Come. Thank you once again to Corey for being back on this show. This time, Corey was on the 783rd episode of Creative Control, which is part of the Entertainment One podcast network and is available wherever you get your podcast, pretty much. If you can't find an episode that you're looking for, or if you want to learn more about me and sign up for my monthly newsletter, please visit vishkana.com. You can also like Creative Control on Facebook, or follow the show for now on Twitter at vishcreative, or you can follow me directly on Twitter and Instagram at vishkana. Also, please consider visiting patreon.com/creativecontrol to make a flexible monthly donation to sustain this donor-driven podcast. Most of the good, clean revenue I get for the work I put into this show comes from folks like you, folks who listen to the show and then feel like they want to support it a little bit, at least financially, over via my Patreon. It's very lovely that people do that. It's a modest amount of money, but this is what I really love to do, and I still have this, I cling to this dream that someday enough people will donate to the Patreon, and then this is all I can do. But that's not looking likely anytime soon, but still, I say it every, those of you who hear the show, you know I mention this, so if you can, if you have the money, or you and your friends listen to the show, and you're a Patreon person and they're not, please spread the word. Bring a buddy, a swim buddy or something, and jump into the Creative Control Patreon pool. I didn't like what I just said, but I'm going to leave it in. Anyway, $6 American or more a month grants you access to exclusive content. You get the episodes earlier than everybody else. And still, to this day, I have some Creative Control t-shirts that I could gift to you in exchange for your generosity. Just message me on Patreon. Again, if you can, if you can afford it, if you believe in this show and you want it to continue, please support it at patreon.com/creativecontrol. Thank you so much. Thanks again also to Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee, respectively, in Guelph, Ontario, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario. These independent businesses offer their in-kind support for this show, and I can't thank them enough, so thank you. Also, thanks to Jim Guthrie. He's a good friend of mine and lends me some music of his that I use in aspects of the show. You can learn more about Jim at jimguthrie.org. And finally, thank you for listening to this episode with Corey Hansen. I'm such a huge fan of Corey's, and we always have lovely chats, so I'm glad we were able to reconnect about this wonderful new record, Western Come. It's my guitar rock record of the year, I would say. I love it. So thank you to Corey. Thanks for subscribing to this podcast, the rest of you there, or following it and telling your friends to do the same. I hope you're well, and I will talk to you soon. Bye for now.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.